So to begin with, I'm in Dallas, Texas, so I'd love to know how you came across Brian A. Carr's Whispers to Scar. Were you familiar with his short bus collection or just the short story?
Yeah, so I found it on an old online. It was called Kindle Boys. I think it was like this website that sort of features for some short stories. And I don't know. I had read a bunch of stuff like that, and I just reached out and I just emailed it. A long time ago, that was like, probably, close to 10 years ago, I think, so they were 2009, I think, that I reached out to them for the short. So a while ago, him and I are friends. We keep in contact all the time. He actually just developed his latest book that's coming out into the future, which we sort of been chatting about and stuff. So, he's kind of an interesting character, Brad.
So cool. So I've got to ask, majority of this, what we get to see in Waitlist, that came about from your time in London when you met Enda, or how did that all come about?
The film itself? There was a short story that I wrote originally, and then I turned it into a feature myself. So I wrote the initial script, the feature. And that was while I was in London, when I was sort of doing a lot of commercials at the time, where I just sort of progressed from making music videos to commercials, and I was like quite adamant that I wanted to do something outside or off the something non-commercial. I was like kind of fed off with sort of the commercial fear. So this I wrote, and I was like wanting to do a small film that I could accomplish without a lot sort of in the interior of BC and Canada where I'm from, go do something. And then it sort of turned into more kind of morphed into a bigger project, and they came on board. The script was written, and some other of my commercial partners was doing once a musical with Enda, and they had just sort of finished it. I don't know if it had released or not, but and once became, it won like 8 Tonys or something. It became a huge musical. And then sort of off of that, or during that time, we sent it to Enda, and just to sort of get comics back. And then I met him, and he loved the project and the tone of it, and so I took it on. And so I went to D.C., went to Canada, like a place called Thompson, Okanagan, which is like the interior of D.C., and we went and hung out there for 5 days, him and I, just, nowhere, and chatted about the scripts and things, and he sort of took that experience and redrafted the script, and he did a fantastic job with the characters. It's quite funny. I mean, he's like an Irish playwright, and he's very funny, and sort of very outgoing, and we're like in the middle of nowhere. We're like nobody's speaking. He's like, just get out there. I'm like, we're remote. He's like, what are we doing here? How are we gonna like do? But it was really great.
So I've got to ask you, you brought up that you wanted to do something not commercial. You wanted to do something out that reminded you of home, basically, to some extent. When did you decide on your DP, Darren? Because most people kind of recognize him, obviously, from a lot of music videos like you, but also he's got great stuff with Carrie, and I know he's done all of Kirsten's short films. What attracted you to him as a DP?
Darren and I had worked prior, so there was a lot of factors that sort of as a person, Darren's I love him. He's a really great person. He's also a really, really good friend of my producers, and we had worked on a couple of projects together, and it just so happened that know, he would sit around and he loved the scripts, and you know, he's New York based, and there was a sort of synchronicity between all of us, and it's sort of great time. And plus, I think that, like, I think he's like, you know, when we saw this, which was a couple years ago, you know, I mean, now he's, I mean, he just did Maniac, and he's sort of, but he, I would say he's kind of in a, like an undervalued DP. And I think that's changing now, but I just think he did a great job. But I think the relationships were really important. You know, I hadn't been living in New York for very long, and I had moved from London in 2012. You know, I had some, you know, some English DPs that I was thinking that I wanted to do it. But then, you know, getting somebody out here who is not familiar or doesn't live in New York or gone around kind of seemed like it didn't make as much sense. And so, sort of, the relationship as well as being here and, you know, it's just the synchronicity of that seems to something so small, you know, because it's quite small.
There were a couple of shots that I really adored in the film, and I'd love to just ask about them. The two separate bird shots where we notice a bird through maybe like the glass of a window, and then we take the point of view of the bird.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing those were drone shots, but I'd love to know where you came up with those shot ideas. And then also the beautiful deer shots, especially the one where it comes straight up to him. Such beautiful natural elements to it. Can you talk to me about making those shots happen?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always, I mean, for me, this film especially, you know, the idea of like this, like, you know, perspective on, you know, sort of violent and depressed realities sort of alongside sort of the magic of nature and the connection to the natural world. I feel like we, you know, I sort of, you know, I grew up in Mountain, D.C., in sort of like this, like, small, like, potato picking hick town where, you know, people would, like, go, like, you know, glue outside the back of the, you know, the gas station. And, like, it was pretty rough, you know, but at the same time, we had just, like, the most beautiful, you know, scenery and nature and landscape, and I feel like you kind of get stuck. You almost, it's like sort of claustrophobic feel of like life in the interior, and you look outside and you sort of have the magic of the natural world, and I think there's a lot of answers there and a lot of unknown things that are so scary. And so I think for Will, is in a way sort of trapped in his own body and himself. I think the sort of picture of the miser himself outside or, you know, or looking down on this reality from a different perspective, that was sort of the idea behind the bird. We shot that on, we didn't have a drone, we actually had a helicopter. And my producer, Aaron, we were some commercials. There's a sort of like kind of renegade cowboy helicopter guy in New York, and she had a relationship with him. So he flew up and let us kind of ride his helicopter for a couple hours. And that's sort of how we got all the aerial stuff, which we were really lucky. So that's how he met with Bird. You know, this has this idea of, you know, a contrast between, you know, the heaviness of being, you know, somebody like Will and sort of the freedom of a bird. And the deer, you know, in a way, it's the same sort of thing. It's like this deer sort of comes up and you know, they kind of, you know, it's, you know, I can imagine the deer to be, you know, for the first time, he's sort of, you know, he's sort of gathering this sort of, this strength or this, you know, the courage to kind of go outside. Mind you, it's sort of a bag on his head, but deer could be many things. I mean, again, it's a magic nature, but also it's like, you know, it could, you know, it's, you know, the people that are missing in his life, or his mother, or, you know, but he's sort of, you know, trying to figure out, and the deer has sort of potential representations.
Well, I'm kind of shocked that was a helicopter shot. That so looked and felt like a drone. It was so, did you slow it up at all, or anything like that, the shot?
No, we were quite low, I think. Well, like I said, I mean, where this guy is like a kind of a cowboy, so he, you know, we were quite low. But also, I've got a lot of friends too. So,
wow.
You know, I mean, I've done quite a few helicopter shoots just through commercials, and I've done a lot of drone stuff as well. I mean, I shot a whole commercial last spring with all we shot on drones. We shot and we actually filmed it. So we did it from drones. We shot it on drones as well. The drones are great, but they also they're also kind of tricky, and they require, you know, if you need to do a lot of shots, it's in some ways, you know, helicopter can do just as much. It just costs more at some level. Probably costs a lot more, but you know, if you're shooting with an Alexa or some bigger camera, then a drone team is requires a lot of effort. But yeah, I mean, I was, you know, it was sort of a coup to get him. So we kind of got a whole bunch of stuff, as much as we could in a couple hours.
Well, it looks amazing. I hope you always do that in your films. It was wonderful shots. And then I've got to ask some casting questions. We brought up Will. Where did you find Eli Haley? This is, I never heard of him before.
Yeah, I mean, so casting him was really tricky because, you know, especially a kid of that size. And I mean, he is, you know, bleak. There's not a lot of actors, you know, or real actors kind of working kids that are that big, and we needed him to be big. And it's very sensitive sort of, I don't know, subject, because parents are really worried about sort of, you know, the exploitation of their child, and you know, and often a lot of these kids too are homeschooled, and they're not out present in sort of, you know, doing things like theater and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, we had to sort of go into schools, and you know, we put flyers out like, you know, America's Biggest Loser and stuff like that, where they had these camps. And we found him just outside Nashville, he had submitted a tape. So I think there was a flyer out to the community and the schools, and you know, we had all these sort of tapes of kid in. So he just, there was this thing about him, and he really understood the character of the band. So I spent a day. I kind of got a plane ticket, flew down there, and drove 2 hours outside Nashville. I met him and his mom at a Starbucks, and chatted. Yeah, it was smooth too. Quite an experience. His mom had just she had to leave us alone in the Starbucks. He was like 10, and she's like, "I had to go pick up my other kid," and so him and I are left alone in the middle of nowhere. It's a bit strange, and then he apologized for her leaving because she just gave birth the day before, and I was like, "Your mom just had a child yesterday," and then, you know, about 45 minutes later, she returned. So it was like people are in her arms, but then so with her, this came to me, and it was quite moving, actually. But I thought he was great. But now he's not an actor. He was just a big kid.
Very cool. Let's talk about you finding your Joel. I loved in the press notes that you found him on stage. I think a lot of us are familiar with him as an actor, but tell me a bit about finding your Joel, and I think he's wonderful in this film. It's kind of a first time we've gotten to see him take over a majority of the film.
In this sort of way, yeah. He came up, you know, I went and saw him in Elephant Man with Betty Cooper, and I met him afterwards at the show. You know what, I think it was just really, you know, the conversation we had afterward. I felt that I really respect him as an actor. I think he's great. I you know, I haven't seen him in anything like this, so I sort of had hesitation at first off, but then I but I know that he's been doing some more character stuff, and he's kind of like one of those guys that you're like, nobody kind of knows him, but then everybody does, and you look at him and you see him, they're like, oh, you're that guy. And so I knew that he'd be able to do a good job, and he's just a really nice, it's just something just jived to the net and talked about it. And like, I thought it was sort of inspiring and a sort of scene to take on. That was it, really. It was sort of our meeting that sort of solidified it with me.
One of my favorite moments in the film is when he takes Will in the car and they go drag racing. Can you talk about creating that scene? Because I don't think there's any drag racing at all in Brian's story. I mean, I think that's something you guys created.
Yeah. That scene was the first thing that we shot. So, in a way that it's nice that scene, isn't it? Because it's the only time where there sort of was any sort of emotional release. And then sort of like all this sort of mental, internal emotion that never happens, and then, they kind of let it all out. I'm just like rocket ship taking off or something. And there's like a smile from Will too, so they see it. And it's like such a dangerous, it's like, who would take their kid to go, do a drag race? I mean, you never put a kid in the group to do that. I mean, it's just, they hadn't met, so that was like, I think Eli had just flown out the day before with his mom, and Sandro had just arrived, and neither of them had even talked, and they just got in a car, and we did that scene. And so I think genuinely, Eli was quite scared. we were just thrust into sort of a real drag race, because we were shooting at the end of the season. Around this time, and all the drag races end, so it was the end of the season, so we had to shoot this first because there was no more, and we needed a real drag race because we couldn't afford to stage one. So it was shot in about a week and a half before we started initial production. So it was kind of a stressful, very stressful year.
So I'm curious, we never find out what Joel's, what issue he has, his disease, if you will. I don't want you to give me an answer to that, but I would love to know how that helped in the process of giving Joel such a unique story plot line, and it gives really the conflict of the story. Was that always in there? Did you always have that as part of the character?
You mean like his condition or whatever his condition is?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have quite an in-depth backstory about who he was and what happened to him and why, and Sandro, I had all these stuff when I sent it to him, and we talked briefly about it, but then he just sort of, he carried his own backstory. But I never really wanted to describe his condition or be it about the condition, because I feel like that's, in a way, reality as such, especially you have to go very far. You can go an hour outside of the city, and you're in sort of rural world where, people live and they don't, not diagnosed, everybody's kind of crazy in some sort of way. And I think, that side of reality is there. It's like, how do you deal with your own sort of mental issues when there's not many people around you to sort of help? And, I just sort of choose that for me. I didn't really want to sort of explain. Although every time I got around the sort of, a doctor's meeting or somebody or diagnosing, it just didn't feel like it was right.
Very nice. Kind of to last couple questions, I would love to talk about the music in the film and your choices there. I love some of the piano work throughout. That really kind of seems like almost a theme throughout. But tell me a bit about making the sound design. I was really blown away by it.
Thanks. I think a lot of it comes down to, the more and more I think about it, my editor, who's actually does sound design as well for a living. And so, I think there was a parallel to sort of the edit and sort of the sound design. And we wanted it to be sparse, but I wanted this sort of something kind of slightly hypnotic or something kind of slightly meditative about it as well. And there are some tracks in there that seem to jump out, and some of them are a bit more abstract. But the piano came from, the score is done by this engineer, who is quite an accomplished, and he does a lot of scores. I think he's like won an Oscar or something. And so he loved the movie, and so he made some tracks for it. Not a lot, but he made a handful of tracks, and that was it. And then when he initially cut the film, I cut the ending to this piece of music by this guy called Clint Leake, who is based in Chicago, and he's this 27-year-old sort of pianist, just actually kind of brilliant musician. So I approached him about using his music, and he's sort of let us make music in some stems, and he let us use pieces of his music, so a lot of stuff is his piano, which I think works really nicely. It's kind of rough, too. It's a little, polished piano at all, which is hard to.
Well, I definitely loved it. I think it fit the film so well. And Jaron, I was blown away by the film. And thank you for the time. I hope a lot of people get to see it. I think it's an underrated film. I think it hits you long after you see it.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. I'm glad.